accession number 13249, reel 2.
Mr. Anscombe, reel 2.
Right.
You were just telling me about the job he had.
He used to take these new submarines over, and when they were had done their trials and so forth, the first lieutenants used to take over command, and he'd go on to the next one. In those days, the first submarines, which were Swordfish and Sturgeon, had great big bow buoyancies and a disappearing gun, which used to turn over on its back and go down in the casing. You know, this other stuff. Well, they scrapped that idea because they tried putting it up when she was surfacing and you didn't know what she was going to do next. And it was considered to be too dangerous, so they didn't put them on these S-boats.
Do you think that was a wise move?
Well, I do, because it was a bit frightening when you tried to surface at time and she'd lay on her side almost. Perhaps I'm being a bit dramatic, but she used to do funny things.
This was in the Sturgeon?
Yes.
You had just given me a sketch of the ships you served in pre-war. You said you went to the Porpoise.
Mm. Yes.
In 37.
Yes.
According to your record, here it's
37. 37, yeah.
Which other ships did you serve in pre-war?
I think the Sterlet was the last one. And Parthian, I joined her in April 39. War was declared in September, so I had about 6 months in Parthian as coxswain. Because I went to China after I left the Sterlet.
Can you tell me something about living conditions in the pre-war submarines?
Well, they were, I suppose, for want of a better word, they were primitive. They had their own mess for meals, but sleeping. They had no bunks or anything like that, only senior rates. And the remainder of the ship's company bedded down where they could.
Where did you usually sleep?
Between the torpedo tubes. For foreign.
And what kind of people did you get in the submarine crews?
Well, I would say myself, as far as IQ was concerned, they were a bit better than the general service people.
In what way?
Well, I think they're a little bit more intelligent. I said, why shouldn't I say that? That's what I found anyway. And they were more, they had more aptitude for their job. They wanted to do it. Because if they didn't do it, then somebody suffered. Because submarines are quite vulnerable if somebody makes a mistake. And he can be the most junior ordinary, well, junior able seaman in the boat or stoker. For that matter, I mean, the submarine crew is only as good as the weakest link in the chain.
Somebody once said to me that miners often made good submariners. Did you ever come across that?
Oh, one youngster, a chap called Elijah Whittaker, who lives in Southampton. He was one of the ship's company of the Tempest. Well, I'm jumping the gun now, I bet. Does it matter?
No.
He, which I see him in our reunions, is a very nice lad. Well, he was one of Arthur Scargill's men. He was at Barnsley. And I have had a chat with him about miners, and he said Scargill started off all right, but he didn't know where to stop. That was his general impression of Arthur Scargill.
But
I'm non-political. I mean, anybody can be what language or colour they like. I couldn't care less.
But did they make good submariners because of their experience
I don't think that they made any better, really. I mean, they wouldn't suffer from claustrophobia, that's for sure. That's the biggest thing in submarines the majority of chaps failed with from the physical side, was that they just couldn't bear the enclosed space.
Do you ever get seasick in a submarine?
Oh, God, yes. They're bastards, excuse my expression, in bad weather sometimes.
When they're dived?
Oh, no, when you're dived, it's quite all right. But on the surface, I can tell you a funny story about that. Now, I'm going ahead a bit now.
That's right.
During the war, when I was coxswain of the Parthian, we took some ACAC chaps, soldiers of the same, I think they were gunners, about half a dozen men, there were a sergeant and an officer, into Malta to relieve the ACAC gunners there. And we fitted them up with a mess in the fore ends with the torpedoes. And I said to their sergeant in charge, he was all right, he messed with us, with the chief and petty officers. I said to him, now look, there's plenty of food. When you feel like it, you can take, you know, what you like. Because overnight, chef used to get all the food for the following day out. Because you never opened your fridges when you were dived. Because you kept the sound noise to a minimum. And if you opened your fridges and then you went to you close them again, the motors used to start up. And that's fatal. Anyway, he got all this food out, and on the surface, on the way to Malta, the weather was very bad. It really was bad. And a submarine rolls because she's got no, for want of stabilisers, bilge keels, whatever you like to call them, would impede their diving rapidly. And in a seaway, especially if it's on a beam, they roll like hell. Anyway, we dived. We went on the surface part of the way, and they didn't want to know. They didn't even want to drink their toss because they come under the same rations as a Navy when they're at sea. And they just didn't want them because the weather was so bad. Well, the first time we dived and we went down to 100 foot, it was flat, you know, like being in a flat calm. And I was turned in my bunk, and the chef came to me about 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning. He said, all the food we've got out for the following day, he says, has just disappeared. I said, don't be so stupid. Where could it go? He said, you told the soldiers they could have what they like, so they've raided the galley. Of course, being flat calm, they got their appetites back. Before then, they didn't bother. But that's just a little insight into life in submarines, I suppose.
Now, can we go on to the outbreak of war? You were telling me you were in the Parthian.
Yes.
Can you describe the ship and what she was like to live in?
Well, she was a very comfortable submarine. She was 1,400 tons. I might be a bit out, but I know it was around that point. Everybody, apart from a couple of unfortunates, had bunks in her. They didn't have to rely on sleeping on the steel deck or anything like that. And she, as I say, she was a very comfortable submarine, and all those old P's and R's were. They weren't the quickest of divers, which was a drawback. But during the war, we managed to get them down in record time. If we were, you know, spotted by the enemy.
Who was the captain when you joined her?
Michael Gordon Remington, the finest submarine captain that I know of. He never got beyond a commander. in my opinion, he should have done. Because you'll see his record it down there. He was a captain when she did all those sinkings. And he was a bit fiery tempered, but he was a first-class captain, in my opinion. And I think I had more contact with him with any other member of the crew.
Did he lose his temper with you?
Once.
Over what?
Well, we were doing a reconnaissance for Rotsey Island, or Rhodes Island, as they call it. Its official name is Castel Rotsey, off the southern coast of Greece. And the Germans had taken it over, and they were using it as a springboard for Crete. And we were sent there to do a reconnaissance in the channel between the mainland and the island. And on board at the time, we had an American neutral, because America wasn't in the war then, when Crete was on, and we had an American neutral, Commander Fife, who eventually became the admiral in charge of all submarines in the Far East in the later part of the war. And he proved to be a very good friend of the British Submarine Services. Now, to go back to the part I was going to tell you, we were going round the island and in this channel between the island and the mainland, taking his different bearings and so forth. And why we were doing that is the cruiser squadron, I think it was the first cruiser squadron, were going to come in and take over the island. And, you know, put the Germans out so they couldn't have it. Well, that part of the operation went fine. But I was on the afterplanes, which is the coxswain's job. And my job is to control the submarine with the afterplanes. The foreplanes control the depth, and I control the angle. And Remington suddenly said to me, the weather was a bit naughty, and we were pumping up and down, that's when we say, you know, coming up and down, which is fatal with a submarine, because you might break surface, and that's not funny. And he suddenly said to me, I had you in this bloody submarine because I thought you could handle her. You're no better than the rest. And that hurt my ego, because I thought I was pretty good. Anyway, I did say to him, well, I better, you know, requested that I leave. I'm obviously no good to you. And he laughed at me. So I didn't leave. The outcome of that was that they took the island, but they couldn't hold it because we had no air support. So they held it for 2 days. And what we had to do was to burn a beacon at a set bearing from, I think it was about just before midnight till about 4 a.m. That's not funny off an enemy coastline. And so they went by marking on our bearing. They went in and, as I say, they took the island. I won't get any marks for being technical, I'm sure. But anyway, that's what happened. And another funny bit about Remington was we were doing an attack once, and you know that Captain grabs the periscope handles as the periscope comes up. One day he was going round on his knees while we were doing this attack, and he put his knee in a spot of water about the size of the old half crown. I don't know if you know them or not. And he said, of course, everything's tense in the control room scene. He said, is it necessary for me to be up to my bloody neck in water when I'm doing an attack? And that sort of broke the tension a bit. But that's the sort of man Remington was. He didn't mean anything to do with his ship's company. Nobody would interfere with him. He expected from you to do your best, and he did the best for you. But he did have a temper, yes.
Now, can we go back to the beginning of the war with Parthian, and what duties was the boat undertaking when war was declared?
Well, we were in Singapore. It was a Sunday, if I remember, about 6:30 in the evening, and we were out on patrol, not offensive patrol, and the signal came through to say that, I think the code word was capstan, wasn't it?
I can't remember.
No, I can't for sure. And he cleared lower deck, and I told him, reported to him in lower deck, been cleared apart from chaps actually on duty. And he said, from such and such a time, we are at war with Germany. And we were somewhere up in the Malacca Straits, I think. We were prepared more or less for war. But we went back to Singapore. Previous to that, I'd been up the canteen. I'd had one or two too many, I think. And he was waiting for me when we got back on board the Medway, which was our parent ship. And he said, there's no sleep for anybody tonight. He said, we're preparing for war. We're loading warheads that go on torpedoes, store ship and everything, and we're sailing on a war footing at 4:30 in the morning. And we went up, as I say, the Malacca Straits. There was a German ship in Penang, and we were patrolling up and down outside, and she wouldn't dare, a merchant ship, she wouldn't dare poke her nose out, because we would have sunk her if she'd come out, just the first thing we would have done. But anyway, she overstayed her time, and she was, what they call it, impounded after in turn. Well, then after that, we were in such a bad state, so we went back to Hong Kong, and we went in dock for about 3 months.
In Hong Kong?
In Hong Kong, yes. Because we didn't really know what the war was about then, you know, out there. And then when we came out of dock, which was, I think, April or May 1939, we did the normal, you know, doing trials and things after being in dock, swinging compasses and all that sort of thing. And we did a short patrol up the China coast. And when we came back, we were informed that we were going forthwith to the Mediterranean. And the Medway went on the surface with about a dozen submarines trailing behind her on the surface all the way, right till we got to the Eastern Mediterranean. And we were based at Alexandria. And we did one or two patrols, uneventful. And then just before June, sometime in May, we went on patrol off the Brook. I might not have these dates correct, but I'm trying to think. We were on patrol off the Brook. I was on the after planes. I did the first 2 hours of the afternoon watch. And the duty officer, a chap called Philip May, who was our navigator, he sighted something through the periscope. and he wasn't sure what it was. But we'd been warned that there was an Italian submarine returning to Tobruk. So the captain came on the periscope and had a look. He said, it's a WOP, or whatever. He always had derisory terms for the Italian. I don't know why, but he said, it's a WOP submarine, he said. And, can I go back a bit?
Yes.
The previous day, we'd gone into the entrance of Tobruk, and there was an old cruiser in there that they were using as a storeship. So we went in a swept channel into Tobruk and tried to torpedo the San Giorgio. But unfortunately, we didn't know that there were sandbanks that had been built around her, and a torpedo's exploded on this sandbank, so we didn't sink her. Now, the following day, that is where I've just been telling you. We saw the Diamante, as we learnt she was subsequently, and the captain started the attack. He fired a spread of four torpedoes from a distance of 400 yards, and all four hit. There wasn't anything left of her, for which he got a DSO.
What do you personally remember of that attack?
Well, it was just like, as far as I was concerned, it was just like a peacetime attack. We just went, you know, a copybook attack, as you might say. It was a perfect attack. I mean, four torpedoes sitting out of four wasn't bad going. Mind you, we were a bit close. Could have done with being a bit further away, but anyway, she went. We were going up for survivors, and as I told you, I was a pretty good swimmer, and I was one of those to go up on a casing, see if we can pick somebody up. And we were just about the surface when there was a terrific explosion, and the captain decided that caution, he wouldn't, what's the expression I want?
Risk it?
Well, he wouldn't risk it now. He thought discretion was a better part of valor, I think. And he decided he wouldn't go up. Mind you, we were off to a brook. And I mean, she must have had a shore battery, apart from anything else, which I could have picked it up. And we didn't pick anybody up.
What time of day was this?
We sighted her, I think, about 1:15. And I think we sank her about 3 o'clock.
In the afternoon.
Sit down there, I think you'll find. It was the first success of a British submarine in the Mediterranean.
So this was the Italian submarine Diamante?
Yeah, Diamante.
What was the atmosphere in the Parthian when you'd had this success?
Very quiet. This nonsense that you see in the American submarines, everybody dancing and shouting. I thought about that. Believe me, I'm not. But I thought about the chaps in the submarine. I'm after all sent down the same as us. And it could have quite easily have been us, couldn't it? Perhaps you think that I was wrong to think like that.
No. So you felt sobered, did you?
It had a sobering effect on people. Well, it did on me. And that was that.
What happened after the Diamante?
Well, we went back when we finished our patrol, and then went back to Alex. And then the next thing there on there is this has been copied out of the official history of the war.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, what's the next one we sank? Well, I don't know. We were fairly lucky. We sank lots of things.
Well, I think that in July 1940, you landed an agent.
Oh, yes. Yes, we were the first submarine to land an agent behind enemy lines.
Where was this that you landed the agent?
I could find out. Because
It says here, Gromino Bay, Crete.
Yes, well, that's probably...
Can that be correct, in 1940?
No, it wouldn't, would it?
Because that was still under Greek control.
Yeah. We didn't have Remington on board when that happened. We had a chap called Richard Cayley, who was my Jimmy in the Pandora, as a matter of fact. He, and I think he had the utmost after that. He had a very good, successful career, but of course he met his Waterloo. He was sunk at all hands.
Do you remember anything about the agent on board?
No, we weren't told anything at all about him.
But you saw him?
Yeah. The only thing that I can remember that when he came, he was a Greek, I think, and when he came into the control room, Cayley asked him to look through the periscope, see if he could recognise where we were. And he put his eye to one of the handles you hold it with. And of course, there was a bit of titter of laughter among the crew. And Cayley soon shut him up. He said, if you buggers have got half the guts of this chap's got. Well, he did have guts anyway. I mean, being landed from a British submarine, they wouldn't have taken short shrift with him, wouldn't they? And we landed him. The engineer officer took him ashore in our boat, in a small collapsible boat. His name was Duffin. As I say, he took him ashore and landed him. And I hope this is going to be edited, otherwise it's going to sound bloody awful.
Well, don't forget, this is not for a broadcast, it's
no.
For an archive.
But
did you pick him up again, the surgeon?
No. I don't know what the object was. We weren't told.
How did you like the work of landing agents as compared with the ordinary submarine patrols?
Well, really, there wasn't much in it. The only thing was that we were at the surface off an enemy coastline, which, whereas before on normal patrols, if you sink anything, you remain dive, don't you? I mean, submarines places dive, not on the surface.
Can you tell me about the incident, which I think was the autumn of 1940, when you attempted to ram a U-boat? Do you remember that?
I got faint recollections, but it doesn't, to be truthful, I can't really remember. A U-boat tried to torpedo us, but we managed to avoid her, and the torpedo ran up the side of the submarine. And all Remington said, we put it on the notice board, that as we had, they had tried to, you better tried to ram us, but we managed to take avoiding action. And he passed the remark that it was a bloody good shot.